Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Mind Shock Podcast, True Crime. This is Bruce McGuire.
Rob Davis.
Bill Powers.
Today, we're going to look at the Breonna Maitland case. This case is connected to the Maura Murray case. Some people think a serial killer is responsible for both their disappearances. We haven't really talked about Breonna Maitland much, and this case is a little weird in its own way. It looks to be a little bit more solvable, or a lot more solvable than the Maura case, but the circumstances are definitely strange. People aren't talking. The police didn't investigate properly. There's a lot of parallels to the Maura Murray case, and it happened only a couple weeks after, or six weeks or so after, in Vermont. So on March 19th, 2004, 11:20 p.m., 17-year-old Breonna Maitland clocked out of her job. She worked at Black Lantern Inn in Montgomery Center, Vermont. She had a second job as a waitress in St. Albans. The Black Lantern had been busy, and earlier in the day, she had been shopping with her mom, Kelly. So she was super tired, and she told her fellow workers she couldn't stay for an after-closing dinner.
By the way, 2004, so that's the same year as Maura?
It's a month and 2 weeks
after. It's a month after.
A month and 2 weeks, yeah,
right.
March.
Okay.
Less than 2 hours later, her car was spotted a mile from the inn, backwards into an abandoned roadside farmhouse. Like, broken through.
Yeah.
And it's one of the creepiest pictures of any crime scene you'll ever see. It's just really, really bizarre. And her car is like an old car, too.
So and didn't the cops say, like, oh, I thought it was just there, it didn't look suspicious, so I drove by or something like that?
This case has a lot of police ineptitude as well.
If you see a car through a building, you're like, oh, yeah, I just thought they were hanging out.
I don't know what's up with that police officer, but, yeah, so, and the headlights were still on. There were two uncashed paychecks on the front seat. I mean, normally when you want to rob somebody,
yeah,
you just, you know. And she was never seen again.
Well, you know something? All these cases, none of them seem like a case of robbery. You have $32,000 in the Jameson.
Yeah.
You have, you know, Maura's car is filled with all kinds of stuff.
In the Jameson case, supposedly there was a second bag of money. So they could, because that $32,000 was hidden under a seat. They might have not found it.
Okay.
They might not found it. But this was right on the front
seat.
Yeah,
it's on the seat.
So, yeah. And, oh, it was 5 weeks ago, 90 miles south. Is when Maura Murray went missing.
Okay.
And just a quick overview of Maura Murray, just as a tie-in. Maura Murray was a 21-year-old UMass student, and she apparently got into a car accident after a sharp curve on Route 112 near Haverhill, New Hampshire. Within a few minutes, Butch Atwood, a bus driver, stopped and offered assistance.
It's another vehicle that's the wrong way.
Yes. Well, we might as well work into this. We might as well work this into it.
Right.
Butch Atwood actually claimed he was a former police officer,
uh-huh.
Which he wasn't.
Oh.
And that's what he told reporters. We actually didn't talk about that.
No.
So he's got a whole bunch of weird statements. But anyway, he told reporters he was a former officer and he wanted to help Maura. She and to call AAA or whatever. She said she already did, even though there was no cell phone service in the area. So Atwood just went up to his house 100 yards away and called police. 10 minutes later, a Haverhill police officer, Cecil Smith, arrived on the scene. Maura Murray's car was empty, and she was gone. So both Breonna Maitland and Maura Murray, missing in New Hampshire and Vermont, have caused some people to think that a serial killer may be on the loose because they happen pretty close together and not that far away.
And both girls taken from cars. I mean, from
yes.
A superficial standpoint, the MO is kind
of car accident.
You know, car accident, girl
disappeared.
Missing. Car
yes.
Accident, girl missing.
And issues with police.
Yeah.
Like,
what if the serial killer is part of the police department?
It's messed up.
Yeah.
That's messed up. And so the Breonna Maitland case has more to do with drugs. So just as a quick background, like basically all crime, including murder rates in the 50s and 60s, were either zero or just a couple. So like they were, New Hampshire and Vermont used to be really, really low crime states.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 70s and 80s, then crime started to pick up.
Isn't New Hampshire now like the leading obituate death in the United
not
States?
Not sure.
I think New Hampshire is...
That's so weird because I know New Hampshire as the Free State Project. Whenever you say New Hampshire, it's the Free State Project. A lot of libertarians live there.
Because they try
to create a freer state, but it's kind of a stupid because you can't have freedom without...
Our community of New Hampshire is unbelievable too because they had, you know, there was money there and a lot of the artists went, you know, would go there to live because... You know, it was just rich and nice and beautiful landscape. And I think now the obituates flowing into New Hampshire, I think it's the most in the United States. It's crazy.
Well, since the 90s, violent crime and murders just skyrocketed.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. Now you have a bunch of obituate problems.
And now here's a tie-in we have to do with the more. In a future tie-in, but so from 1970 to 2004. About 30 women vanished in Vermont and New Hampshire. Not under these circumstances,
just in general.
But is that like a high number based on like compared to other states?
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Like what's like?
I don't have the other state statistics. Well, it's pretty high. Incredibly high relative to those states in the past.
Okay, got it.
So
it's a white slavery ring, so out of
all those states, out of all those women, 10 were found. Brutally murdered. 19 remain unaccounted for, and there's also over 60 unsolved homicides in Vermont and New Hampshire during that time.
If it's a kidnapping sex ring, and they're not participating, they're gonna get murdered. I'm telling you, there is a problem with the slave trafficking ring in the United States. People disappear from all the major cities, and they get sold. There's a slave trafficking.
Yeah, it's insane, especially Washington, D.C.
It is crazy. I know people don't like it being brought up, but it is crazy, and they could have been taken.
Yes.
And then the ones that were found were dead.
But people don't like to talk about it. It's disturbing.
Well, yeah,
but you have to talk about it if you really want to solve this problem.
Because when you look at the slave trafficking, they a lot of times they like to pump them up on drugs to make them a little more just completely clueless to the situation. But the ones that are problems, they end up either overdosing or getting killed, and that would be the ones that were found murdered.
Well, the Maitland case is a little different because there are some local...
Well, I'm not saying her. I'm just saying the dead people. Local suspects who kill people?
Well, local suspects who knew her and she knew them, so it's not like Mora where everything's a question.
Oh, yeah, but I wasn't saying like her. I was just talking about the statistics of the missing women and then the ones that were found dead.
Yeah.
If someone's kidnapping girls and trying to sell them. All right.
So, have you guys heard of the Valley Killer?
No.
So, the Valley...
No, I've never heard of that.
So, in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of young women murdered in both New Hampshire and Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And the media called this the Valley Killer.
Okay.
Remain unknown to this day. So, there were at least 7 women attacked, 6 were killed, and some of them physically resemble Maitland and Murray. So that's the type of victims that he picked. The people pointing against it being the Valley Killer is that he took a break for 15 years. I mean, although that has happened, serial killers, for some reason they take a break.
Or they're in jail, because if you haven't caught them, you don't know if they're incarcerated or...
But a lot of the ones that weren't incarcerated, they for some reason had a need to kill, then something happened and it subsided, and then something else in their life triggered it again and they had to go back to doing it. So there is some precedent for that, but it's not, it's pretty rare.
They got a job as a clown. They worked as a clown for 15 years, and then the circus closed, and they had to go kill again. Clowns are messed up, dude!
Usually from the FBI profile, serial killer profiles, a killer is going to escalate. They always escalate.
Yep.
So when they kill, they're going to kill more and more and more and more. They don't usually take a break for X amount of years, or their need increases.
Was there ever like a patterned killer like once a year? Like, I don't know.
I think there were those, yeah.
But the common thing is like the escalation, like
yes, so the escalation is very common in serial killers.
Are there any DWBs in the area? It's a serious question because, you know, are there any cults or devil worshiping bastards in that area?
I don't know if they looked into that too much. I don't know. But hold on. So The police.
That's legitimate, Maxwell.
The police.
Because if there's kidnappings and murders, do we know if any of them were ritualistic in nature or were they just like more serialistic, like?
They were so.
No, tied down and ritualistically killed. And,
The police say there is no reason to believe that a serial killer is on the loose. Don't they always say that when they're
Yes. Okay. To keep people from being afraid.
The police also maintain that unsolved cases are not connected in any way.
Yeah.
The Maura Murray and Breonna Maitland cases. Okay, Bruce Maitland, Breonna's father, says just because there isn't any evidence is not a reason to close the door on that theory or any other. If you look at the vital statistics on all of these missing women, you'd see right away that most are startlingly similar. If none are related, then that means there are a good 100 or so individual murderers out there roaming about free to do anything they want. Well, a lot of crimes are crimes of passion and emotion, so once they kill, they don't do it again, so...
But I was going to say, area of influence, you can't have multiple murders in one state where something doesn't cross something. You know what I mean? Like, so it wouldn't necessarily have to be 100, you know? Because I can't see... If 100 people get killed, I don't think you're going to have 100 murders. Someone's going to have to dip into, you know, multiple killings, even if they're... I guess... The reason behind the killings wouldn't be connected, even if somebody overlapped. All right.
So just quick background on Breonna Maitland.
Crashes her car into a house, leaves the lights on, disappears.
Background.
Oh, not on the case itself, sorry.
Right.
On her.
So yes, girl. quick background on Breonna Maitland. So basically, everybody described her as... caring, independent, really good at everything she did, and the best friend that anyone could ask for. Her mom said that she loved reading, she loved the outdoors, music, dancing, highly skilled in the martial art of jiu-jitsu, having taken several years of training. She didn't grow up with a television in her house, so she loved works of the imagination that held meaningful lessons about life. Breonna's aunt said Breonna would always amaze me by quoting long sections from books she had read and equate them to something pertinent happening in her life. She was very introspective about things. Her father said she was oblivious to all her talents and good qualities. She never showed any kind of conceit. She loved life and embraced every minute of it, good or bad, and was always there to help anyone that asked. Now, she hadn't been living with her parents at the time. She was living with a friend. Roommate, and she had left like one school because she had like issues with people. Well, more people had issues with her. So,
but if she's the best friend anybody could have, why would they have issues with her?
Well,
I mean, like, what were the like
girl jealousy issues? She's pretty, she's smart. The boys like her more. The clique type issues. Mm-hmm. So, one of the problems in the area, New Hampshire, obviously. Is drugs, so cocaine and heroin, and so a lot of dealers from New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut go up there because the rural towns, there's less police and they can sell for a much higher price. So instead of staying in like New York City with a ton of competitors, and risk getting shot, they can go to a safe New England rural town and sell to high school kids for way more money without having to worry about their competitors shooting them.
Yep.
So it got, you know, it got really bad.
It's the opioid addiction now.
And so, yeah, rampant heroin, cocaine addiction, and all this stuff. Vermont State Police Investigator Brian Miller said, I think for some kids, drugs serve as an escape mechanism from the drudgery and isolation of winter and living in a small town. When there's little to nothing to do, a lot of kids will take turns in the wrong direction. People that live there say that, you know, the economy went down to a lot, so they're having economic problems. People in Vermont are fiercely independent, and due to this, there can be a lack of community spirit, especially as people become more spread out and don't know their neighbors. People are less likely to get involved in any meaningful way. There are also people who are truly working too hard to make ends meet and don't have time to do much else. The lack of spiritual roots is also a major factor, particularly amongst the youth. So, Breonna was rumored to be involved with drugs, and she knew a lot of the, well, not a lot, she knew a couple of the dealers that are suspects in this case, and we'll get into them later. Regarding, again, the connection between the cases, Vermont State Police Lieutenant Thomas Nelson stated, "We have looked at the possibility that Breonna Maitland's and Maura Murray's disappearances are related and talked with the New Hampshire State Police about both cases. We have not found anything that connects the cases in any way."
So what are the theories?
Hold on. There was on June 14th, 2004, Vermont and New Hampshire law enforcement authorities held a joint press conference to address the serial killer reports that he was operating between the states and stalking young women. At the conference, Lieutenant Nelson stated that Maitland made unhealthy lifestyle choices in her life prior to her disappearance. Breonna was involved in the drug communities in Franklin County. She allowed that world to become part of her world. Captain Lang said that Breonna owed someone money for drugs at the time of her disappearance. Now that was an unsubstantiated claim. So I'm not sure where he got that. I guess one of her friends probably told him that. So yeah, that's why he said that. Breonna's friends and her parents say that those statements aren't quite accurate. They said that everybody in Franklin County does something. Parties, parking lot, dances, bathrooms in high schools. Everybody does something, but not everybody's an addict. Bruce Maitland said, "Nelson's statement, in my view, was an exercise in character assassination. It was a calculated effort to paint my daughter out as a bad person that got what she deserved. It was an effort to draw the heat away from the police. It made me sick to hear it. No teenager deserves to be portrayed that way by a public servant, especially when they are missing and nobody knows the facts or their fate." So, you know what, that's what's interesting, you know, because now the police are saying, okay, she was involved in drugs, whereas the Haverhill police are saying, oh, well, Maura was suicidal, she was, you know, well, she's going to kill herself. Everything shifts the blame away from the police.
Well, yeah, well, and it's some contradictory stuff, too, because they started out with her background saying, you know, how nice and...
The police didn't say that.
Well, yeah, I know, but that is her personality type, and that contradicts a little bit of someone who knows drug dealers, is involved with drugs, and is out
not
doing slightly shady shit.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't hang out with drug dealers.
How do you know? Maxwell, what are you doing on the weekends?
You selling drugs?
Well, I have nothing against selling drugs. It should be legal, but...
So you do it?
I don't sell drugs because
it's shady shit, and you know what happens? You disappear.
The risk, well, I'm not interested in selling drugs because the harmful effects that it has.
Yeah.
But also, I don't sell drugs because the ramifications from the legal system is just
too much of a risk.
But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be illegal.
No,
it should be allowed. I mean, if it's artificially inflated by the states.
And I'm not saying that I look down on my friends who sell drugs. I'm just saying that if you hang out with too many drug dealers, eventually end up in some shady situations where people could get shot and disappear and all kinds of messed up stuff.
And so this was at the same press conference. Maura Murray's father, Fred...
Oh, no.
Took offense.
Was this the joint?
Yes.
Okay.
Took offense to Scorinza saying it was Maura Murray's intention to leave. What's also clear is she did not want to tell any of her family what her intentions were, and she did not tell any of her friends. She was headed for an unknown destination, and she may have accepted a ride to get there.
Okay.
Fred said it does not matter why she left or if she told anybody about it. She had an accident and this presented her with a completely different set of circumstances. Any other plans went out the window. I believe that my daughter would be home safe and sound right now if the police had not ignored the case until it was way too late. They would have known where she was heading if they had bothered to check the last phone call she made 3 hours before she left Amherst. I told the police where she was going 2 days after the accident, but they didn't check that either. The police failed to follow their own procedures and are now striving to prevent this from coming to light. Maura probably did get a ride with one or more of the area's multitudinous sex offenders who law enforcement can't catch because they waited too long to get started.
Where did Fred tell the police she was going?
I believe he's just referring to Bartlett or east of the accident site, and they never searched east. I believe, I'm pretty sure, because I don't think he really knew. He just said she may, because that was the area that they had visited, and
yeah,
that's simply east where they didn't look. Because he had mentioned that a couple times. Why didn't they look east? I don't think he's talking about an exact...
Right,
yeah, he's just in general. Because they just looked back the other way where she had never been. I'm pretty sure that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, but he said that if they didn't look into it fast enough, like they were there the night of.
Wait, what do you mean?
Didn't you just say that Fred said if the police didn't take it serious or look into it soon enough, but they were there the night of, you know, at least running through it, you know, a cursory look through. It's not like they didn't go there.
Well, they never searched. I think he's referring to the
just,
didn't search
just
east.
That way.
Because it was right there. It's a couple hundred yards. He just takes, like, they should have looked.
Yeah.
But they all went the other way. They didn't even look a little bit.
Yeah, I'm still putting out the theory that one of them saw her go the other way, and that's why they chased that way, because I'm still gonna.
Oh, also, I think, okay, so ground and air searches for Maura started 2 days after that night.
And that's so why he said, all right, that makes sense. Yeah.
So,
They didn't do the big search until she was well away.
Yeah, they were only stopping red trucks that night. That's it. That's all they did. And they looked around back in town.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, we never talked about this, but apparently Fred Murray wanted to have America's Most Wanted feature Maura Murray.
They didn't do it?
The police would not provide John Walsh a copy of the report on the case so she could be featured.
Oh, shit.
And that's also one of the things at the beginning that got Fred Murray really angry with
them.
Because now they're getting in the way of getting more publicity out to help find her. Just because they don't want to show anything.
Yeah, because that would be a good show. With the amount of people that... Because usually you don't find this kind of following until after that, until it airs on that show.
Yeah.
All right, what about the missing girl from the car in the barn shack house? What are some of the theories, more of the theories? Do we have any more theories on what
So Brianna, so the Brianna's vehicle is a 1985 Oldsmobile 88, which is a really big car.
Okay.
It's like a boat. Mm-hmm. And that was backed into the abandoned farmhouse in Montgomery. So it's known as the old Dutch Burn Place. And it's named after two elderly brothers, Myron and Harry, who in 1986, Myron and Harry Dutch Burn, who lived there in 1986, one night someone broke into the house to rob it, and both brothers were beaten.
Oh, shit.
And taken to a hospital, then eventually a nursing home. They never returned to the actual barn.
Okay. And what? Anything like what was in the house? Like, was it just a hangout?
It was empty. It was empty. It's like an abandoned house. I mean, there was some random old, really old stuff in there, but nobody really lived there. And
but, I mean,
I think
did
high
school.
Yeah, I think high schoolers hung out there, did drugs, partied, whatever.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a known party spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right next to a open field that's next to a river.
Okay.
So, on March 20th, so this is less than 12 hours after she backed into there and disappeared, a state police officer saw the car, and he actually stopped by the vehicle, and he looked at it, and that's when he saw the paychecks, and he also picked up several items off the ground and threw them in the back seat, tampering with the scene. And then he took down the license plate number, took a photograph, and then he also left thinking that it was just a drunk driver that abandoned the vehicle.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about before. Why would he just assume that? The lights are... Alright, well, I guess I can... Alright. But he just leaves. He doesn't, like, call a tow truck and...
Pretty much.
And
okay, so get this. So here's... Okay, so Jillian Stout, and this is Maitland's, you know, one of Maitland's oldest friends who... They were roommates in Sheldon, Vermont. 3 days later, she called the Maitlands asking if Brianna had come home to them. And that's when they realized she was missing. And they called the police. They said they would put out an alt points bulletin on the car. And when they went to the state police barracks in St. Albans the next morning to fill out all the missing persons paperwork and show them the photo, the patrol officer who saw the car at the Dutch Burn house days before that was there when they were filling out the missing persons report. And he realized that was her. Obviously, Bruce Maitland said, why weren't they notified about the car?
Mm-hmm.
And And the officer said that he was coming back from a long weekend off, and he just didn't get a chance. And Bruce said, I didn't understand why someone else with the police couldn't have called us. The car was registered in my wife's name. They could have easily called us long before we came in to report Bree missing. And so the Vermont State Police can't explain why they hadn't been notified sooner. Yeah, bungling from the beginning. Sound familiar?
Yeah. Like an MM case.
And one of the lieutenants said that a lot of times people that go missing just don't tell their parents and they take off for days. That's their explanation. But this is, she's 17, so she's a minor.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different than the Mora case in that regard.
And that she didn't step off the path. What did they call it? What did that guy say that they suspected Mora? Just went off, like the... Just stepped off the path? What was that expression? That if you walk into the woods, just to...
Squaw walk?
Like, didn't the one guy say that he suspected that Mora just went into the woods to die?
Squaw, yeah.
That's a squaw walk?
Or something like that.
Yeah. Because or walk off the path. She just went in the woods and walked off the path. I don't know. The ineptitude.
So, obviously, Bruce and Kelly Maitland were also frustrated at the police because there was no progress really being made. They didn't seem like they were doing anything about trying to find her.
I mean, did they even have, like... Now, did they do a search after, like... When did she officially become missing?
Like, well, when they filled out the reports, because that was days after.
They filled out the reports.
Yeah, because you have to wait only, what, a day or two? Or yeah. Not even if it's
no,
a minor.
No, it's a minor. Right? I don't think you have to wait
so,
at
but,
all.
But it was several days after anyway. So I guess when the paperwork... They did the paperwork
now,
today. That was officially.
Yeah, did they send people to, like, do the grid walk and investigate and, like...
I'm not sure.
Because by that point, had they located the car by that point when...
Well, they were... The police, basically, they said that the police thought that she had just run away. So I don't think they did a massive search until... Well,
because it just seems strange.
And they kept saying, well, obviously she didn't run away because she had two uncashed paychecks in the car seat. She had her eye contacts and migraine medicines in the car, too, which she wouldn't go anywhere without those. So
yeah,
it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that makes them think that it should be a little more serious.
Also, they pointed out that the car was actually her grandfather's car who died, and that she really liked that car, too, so she wouldn't just leave it like anyway.
But she's, so she's gone, though.
It took 9 days for anyone to be interviewed. So that's when they went to where she worked, the Black Lantern Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting annoyed with Bruce Maitland. So, and supposedly, one source who remains unidentified said that one police officer told Maitland, or told the other officers, for every call he got from the Maitlands, he would work all the less on the case.
Oh, jeez.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
That's really messed up.
Yep.
They also didn't take any fingerprints for Brianna Maitland. So her vehicle had been impounded for months and they didn't do any fingerprints. And they waited months to request DNA samples from Bruce and Kelly Maitland. So they basically did almost nothing for months. Also, one of the main suspects they had, and we'll get into the suspects list in a little bit, Kelly Maitland said, worst of all, they told us that people we were told had snatched or killed Brianna were in prison at the time of her disappearance, and now it seems that was not the case at all. Because one of the major suspects supposedly was in prison, but then they found out that he wasn't. But the police had told him he was.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's kind of messed up.
Well, yeah, but then that makes me, if they're going to do that, then that makes me question the serial killer that they found an alibi for Mora. Remember, they're like, oh, he's over there, and we have footage of him going through a toll booth, so he didn't do it. What if that was a lie, too?
I don't know. 20 days before her disappearance, so this is February 27th, Brianna Maitland was at a party with friends, and there were other people there she didn't know. One of those people, Keely LaCrosse, attacked Maitland. So she had two black eyes, facial cuts, and a concussion. Supposedly, Brianna didn't defend herself. So she ran away from the party and went to someone's house where she called her dad, who picked her up. The next day she went to the hospital, and then she filed a complaint with the police, and they took her picture. So she had a really busted up face. The complaint, which was still pending when she disappeared, was then dropped by the Franklin County District Attorney's Office, and her parents didn't want it to be dropped because that's still a crime. Mm-hmm. Now, at the exact time the complaint was dropped, Vermont State Police, with the U.S. Border Patrol and U.S. Fish and Game, raided a house in Berkshire, Vermont. This is 10 miles from Montgomery. The police were acting on a confidential tip that Breonna Maitland was being held against her will in the house, and that two drug dealers, Ramon L. Ryans and Nathaniel Jackson, may have played a role in her disappearance. And these are the two main suspects in the case. Now, going back to the attack, there's a couple things that don't add up with the story as well. So supposedly it had something to do with a guy, and that's why she attacked her. Some people, there were other testimonies that said that Brianna was actually taking a nap in a truck, and that she was attacked while she was sleeping in the truck by multiple people, not one. Just background info. So it was a messed up. So we don't have a copy of the actual complaint, so we don't know who she names or the exact details. But definitely interesting, and definitely interesting that that was when the complaint was dropped, that they did a raid on this house. Because the rumors at the time were that Brianna was kidnapped against her will and taken to some house where she OD'd. That was the main thing. Got it? So when they searched the house, there was no signs of her. There was marijuana, cocaine, handguns, and other drug paraphernalia. And police arrested everyone in the house. And everyone in the house admitted to knowing Maitland, but they said they didn't know where she was or what happened to her.
Kind of like all the people on the street who should have seen Maura in the car, and they all say, except for the family that goes down. Because people pleading ignorance just seems to overwhelm both cases.
Yes. Well, okay. So Jackson was arraigned and released pending trial without bond. He left the state, and Ryans left Franklin County and went to Burlington, Vermont, which is 30 miles away. He moved into the apartment of a 25-year-old single mother, Legia Ray Collins. You following, Maxwell?
Ray Collins.
Trying.
On July 4th, 2004, midnight, Legia Collins disappeared. Ramon Ryans was still with Collins at the time, and he was the one that reported her missing. Burlington police now are investigating Collins' disappearance. On July 12th, a little more than a month later, they attempted... This is... Okay, so they were following a 52-year-old guy named Moses Robar, who was being pursued. He pulled over and shot himself in the head. And I guess he didn't die. Two days later, Robar died in the hospital, and Legia Collins was found murdered in the Green Mountain National Forest in Lincoln Gap, Vermont. A week later, two people were arrested for Collins' murder. There was, in the confession, Ryan's name was lost. Law enforcement officials said he left Vermont and returned to New York City, and he was put on Vermont's top 10 most wanted list. Okay. A few months later, May 23rd, 2005 now, Ryans was arrested in New York City. He was brought back to Vermont to stand trial in St. Albans, back for the house raid and all the drug paraphernalia for that charge. Mm-hmm. And the Maitlands set up a website dedicated to their daughter's disappearance. They received tips about a man called the Joker. A drug dealer. He was identified as Jorge E. Soto of Springfield, Massachusetts. He was an associate of Ryan's. Ryan's name was Street, and Nathaniel Jackson... nickname was Low Jackson. So Soto, who lived in Richmond, Vermont, 13 miles from Montgomery, had been bragging that he killed Breonna Maitland.
There's always some bragging.
And people said that he was famous for killing a puppy at a party with his bare hands because it was barking. He would also brag that he was untouchable by law enforcement. When he was questioned about killing Brianna, he told them that he just made them up to appear big and mean, so that people who owed him drug money would take him seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after the police questioned him, he continued to tell people that he killed Maitland. And he even told some people that he buried her body in a St. Albans cornfield behind a house. Okay. June 2005, Ramon Ryans appeared in court in St. Albans and pleaded guilty to possession of cocaine and marijuana in the house raid. The judge sentenced him to 45 days to 1.5 years, with all the time suspended except for 45 days. And then the 45 days were taken away because of the time he served. And they amended his cocaine charges from a felony to misdemeanor because Ryan spoke with the police about Maitland. He also submitted to a polygraph test. The tests weren't released at this time, but they were said to be inconclusive. And the assistant district attorney told reporters that Ryans did offer state police investigators information in the Maitland case that drew them away from false leads and put them on the right track with things. She did not comment further. So basically, he gave them some kind of info.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other
we're not sure.
Other PIs on the case said that he lied about the info and got his sentence erased, and he was really responsible for her death, or knew who he was, and he assisted in getting rid of the body. Like, one of the main PIs on the case thinks that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were plenty of other tips, and they all named Ryans, Jackson, and Soto in the disappearance. Bruce Maitland said, "This guy made a mockery and a joke out of the police and the court system. From what I know, he gave the police nothing. He destroyed countless young lives in Vermont, and by sending him back on the streets, he'll keep right on doing it."
Yeah.
They also wanted to get the FBI involved in the case, but there's nothing. If they can't prove serial killer across state lines, the FBI didn't really do anything.
You would think that, because I guess they don't do run-of-the-mill kidnappings, really.
Okay, so let's get to a couple of other points. October 31st, 2005. Tom Patras, one of the Maitland's former neighbors and friend, was found murdered in Montgomery, Vermont, just a few miles away from Brianna disappeared. Patras was 47, and he was discovered dead with Valerie Papillo, 36, who had come to his house to have dinner. He was shot in the head, and Papillo was severely beaten before being shot in the face. So obviously there were rumors that the killings were related to Brianna's disappearance. But a couple from Connecticut, James Ricciatelli, 51, and Elizabeth Gagne, 29, supposedly heroin addicts, went to Montgomery on October 30th to look for two men Ricciatelli had worked with at Jay Peak Resort. The couple were attempting to buy drugs, and when they went to Patrice's house, he told them he didn't have any, so they killed him. A week later, the Maitlands received a confidential tip concerning a 32-year-old man named Gerald T. Montgomery. Supposedly, Montgomery was an associate of Ryan's and Jackson. On March 8, 2005, Montgomery had raped, beaten, and strangled to death a 31-year-old Laura Winterbottom. In December, the Maitlands received another confidential tip about a young St. Albans man that Brianna knew who had been close with Ryans, Jackson, and Soto. The message said that the young man had committed suicide and left behind a note with details about Brianna's disappearance. The guy committed suicide on October 8th, which is Brianna's birthday. Anything? So,
again, nothing ritualistic.
Now, February...
It's seeming like it's going to lean that way, and then...
So there was a sighting of someone who resembled Brianna, surveillance footage, Caesar's Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And a guy in Vermont was gambling there and saw her and reported it. Because he said there was a woman there who looked like Brianna. So obviously very poor quality video, and she looks older than Brianna Maitland. She's also with a man who appears to be in his 40s. And Bruce and Kelly cannot positively identify her. Okay, so remember the joint press conference we mentioned, 2004? Murray and Maitland, so Fred Murray and Bruce Maitland, they wanted law enforcement to look into the possibility that not only the serial killer possibility, but the possibility that they had been abducted for purposes of slavery and forced prostitution.
There you go.
Bruce Maitland said that they laughed at the slavery theory, but in 1999 and 2000, there were several cases of young women in Burlington, Vermont, who were forced into prostitution in New York. Jose Rodriguez, a convicted felon who lived between Vermont and New York, was arrested and charged with operating a prostitution ring and statutory rape. He was also a suspect in the death of a 16-year-old who at the time was a ward of Vermont's Social and Rehabilitation Services Agency. Jones was found dead in a New York apartment building, where supposedly was known for prostitution. The Burlington Free Press reported that men like Rodriguez come to Vermont to target young women to be forced into prostitution. They sell heroin cheaply to get them addicted and then manipulate them into selling themselves for more heroin. An FBI profiler has stated, based on the materials I've seen, I would not rule out anything, including a serial killer in one or both cases, especially the Murray case. With all the media and Hollywood focus on these type of killers, they have become all the smarter and devious. I also wouldn't rule out that either state could see a reoccurrence of these events sometime soon. Maurice Godwin is a recognized expert on serial killers. He stated, in my expert opinion, I believe that a local individual who has killed at least two times previously is responsible for Maura Murray's abduction and murder. Maura locked her car as if she anticipated on returning to the car once she found help. Her attack and murder was for a sexual assault, and the murder was to do away with her as a witness. Yes, I believe a stranger serial killer is responsible for Maura Murray's disappearance. Godwin states that the facts in the Maitland case point to abduction or foul play committed by someone Brianna Maitland most likely knew. So that's the basic outline of the case.
Kind of complex.
Complex outline?
There's so many variables.
Yes. Not as many in the Maitland case, though, because she supposedly knew Jackson and Ryan's. There was, we might as well get into it now.
Every day the more one gets more complex, because every day more stuff comes out. Who's to say, like, if they don't find Maitland?
There were a number of developments in the Maitland case. One of the most shocking.
Maxwell, get ready.
Shocking. Is a police affidavit. So we remember Legia Collins, who lived with one of the drug dealers.
Mm-hmm.
So she was murdered, and then that was the end of that. She was disappeared. Okay, so apparently Ellen Ducharme was convicted in the 2004 drug murder of Legia Collins. Debbie Gorton is the sister of Ellen Ducharme. Gorton claims Maitland was killed by Ramon Ryans 1 week after her disappearance, and her body was disposed of on a pig farm. She said Ryans killed Maitland over drug money. She gave him a couple $1,000s to buy crack cocaine, but asked for the money back. And there was an argument and she was killed. Gorton claimed that Ducharme told her of the murder and that Maitland's body was in Ducharme's basement at one point. There's another Burlington Police Department report, supposedly, from March 2006. Where Gorton suggested that her sister and Moses Robar and a couple others were involved, especially in disposing of the body. The police stated, "We have no reason to believe that there's any truth to this statement at this point." So what do you think about that? I mean, I'm sure the police followed up with the story, but they can't really identify where the pig farm is. Supposedly, it was kind of close to the location where she went missing. Oh, pig farm. What do you think? Oh, another interesting we didn't go over. One of her, when she was shopping with her mother the day of the, before going to work, someone approached her and warned her not to go to work that day. That person has not been identified. And her mom doesn't know who she like left. It was like outside the store. She
did the mom out. See it?
No. Vaguely, I think she went to fill a figure. Somebody. A figure, yeah. And yeah, so also that morning she got her GED.
So she was done.
So some people theorized she wanted to separate from the, her drug dealer friends, and they didn't. They didn't take too kindly to that. They didn't want anybody getting out. Also, there were rumors that connected the assault that she was. They thought she would tell the police about the drug dealers and that circle of friends, so that's why they killed her.
Oh, man. Really should have a better reason than that. Maxwell. So I didn't know she didn't finish school.
She dropped out of high school.
That's what I mean. She graduated. Yeah. Because she was... I wish there was an oxygen special on her that I could watch.
There's a lot of local rumors about the case, and supposedly, like, the same people keep getting named.
Mm-hmm.
And, Bruce Maitland was threatened, like he went to a house and a guy threatened him and said, "You're gonna end up like Brianna," oh, or shit. Something like just really messed up stuff.
That's just mean, right though?
Yeah.
There's no A-frame house.
Also, there was DNA removed from the car, and there looked like there was a struggle and all that stuff. And
well, I mean, if the lights were left on, like that, I guess if. Like, do you think someone was in the car and they crashed? Or do you think she crashed on her own?
So, one of the lead theories is that she got either flagged down, or someone jumped into the road and there was another car that blocked it off, that forced her off. Or that she was meeting, or someone she knew flagged her down friendly, and then it escalated, so they were in the car doing drugs or something. Or a forced overdose is one of the other theories, because they did, they did find her vomit in the car.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so...
But the car was backed in, right?
Yeah, so... So the theory is she's trying to U-turn to get away.
Or were they just trying to come in and she just put her foot on?
I don't know. Yeah, like, either one of those, yeah.
But if she... crap. Alright, when... I guess... If she vomited in the car, that doesn't bode well.
Right? No, not at all.
That bothers me more than, I mean, yeah, like, both of these are so strange because people can't keep secrets too well, and there's an awful lot of people with both these cases keeping secrets and not slipping up, you know what I mean? Like, people can't keep a secret when there's, like, two people. How can, like, an entire town and family and police force, how can they all keep secrets?
Yeah, it's definitely weird. Also, her ex-boyfriend supposedly was driving home from Canada and spotted the car, but didn't report it or something. And then they later found out that he might have been lying. There's a whole bunch of shadiness with everything in this.
Well, yeah, because if you saw your girlfriend's car back into a house,
you just keep going. You wouldn't call anybody.
You'd get out and go investigate.
Somebody said that he wasn't in Canada and he was somewhere else and he couldn't have been driving by, so he lied about the whole thing. But for what reason? We don't know.
And what's his name? Do we know him?
I don't know.
We need to find out his name so we can investigate. I mean, you see, everybody and their brother investigating more gives us a lot more information, but all that information also convolutes the entire scene, where this one seems like there's a little bit less information.
Oh, a lot less, yeah.
But then we have a lot less to go on.
Yep.
I still don't like the fact that she threw up in the car.
Yeah.
Well, all right, yeah, but it seems like that was rushed also, because if there was a struggle, if somebody killed her or kidnapped her, they would at least turn off the headlights or try to move the car or at least clean up the crime scene. Like, if they left vomit in the car and left the lights on and left the car halfway in the house, it looks like they were disturbed in the process.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's not like...
If they killed her... Or, actually, that does point to them possibly... She was alive when they removed her from the car and they took her somewhere else.
Yeah, but it almost points to one person. Because if there were two, if there was more than one person, like, all right, if you and I were out doing shady shit, and you had the girl, you'd be like, yo, dude, can you do something about the car? Like, at least turn off the lights.
Well,
like,
here's the thing. So,
if I was by myself.
So, there was a few things. Like, first of all, supposedly there was clothing found nearby, mm-hmm. so she could have tried to run away, we don't know. But there was also blood and a needle found. So they could have been a forced overdose. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah, but I'm saying if there was a forced overdose. Yeah, but you want to know something with forced overdoses? Usually they leave the body because it's a setup. You know what I mean? Because, like, you don't hear about people trying to do a forced overdose to kill somebody and then take the body and then hide the body. Like, if they're going to, you know what I mean? Because they do the forced overdose so that it looks like she overdosed on her own. They would leave the body there, and then she would be discovered in her car, and they'd be like, oh, well, she was taking drugs. Like, if they're going to remove the body and bury it, then there's easier ways. Like, they'd probably just choke her to death and then bury the body. But you don't choke someone because when they investigate it, you can't choke yourself to death. They'd be like, oh, look, she obviously choked herself to death with her hands in reverse grip. And, you know, unless it wasn't a forced overdose, unless they just administered something to knock her out so that they could kidnap her. But still, if it was one person, I could say, all right, one person, they get her out of the car, they carry her to their car, and they drive away. And I could see them not turning off the lights or cleaning up the scene. But if there's two people, one person would say, look, turn off the lights. That way no one's going to see the car or not see it as quick.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a bunch of searches.
Or if she ran, like if she crashed,
and then
she got out and ran, the lights would stay on. Like, if she threw up in the car, got, you know, crashed it, got up and ran, then they chased her, and then they couldn't get back to the car because maybe the cop was already there.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And they're like, oh shit, hide in the woods until the cop leaves, and then the cop was taking too long, and so they just...
You know what's messed up, though, is that they don't get into... Is it possible they do have the suicide note from the other guy who was connected, who killed himself on Brianna's birthday, right?
And what, the cops would have it? The cops, I don't think, if that implicates somebody, they might not release it. Or if it's an open... Is the investigation still open?
What?
I mean, I believe so, yeah. Well, I guess it would have to be open because it's not solved. So they couldn't officially close it, right? But, I mean, it could go, like, cold. Like, are they actively...
I don't think they're that active. I mean, there was some...
I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's been more than 10 years, so they're not really doing anything. 14 years, right?
Yeah.
It still looks like a rushed crime scene.
Yes. Brianna's current boyfriend lived within walking distance of the place where her car was found. And then in this case, there's also a mysterious white truck that was seen in the neighborhood.
A walking distance? Yeah, but all right, but that... And we don't know... If he was questioned, or we don't know the extent to which he was questioned or looked into.
We don't know anything.
Because think about it though, if something happened, she would try to make a run for his place if it's within walking distance.
Unless he was involved.
Yeah. But that, oh my god, because that would be the first logical place that you would go regardless.
Okay, so hold on. There was witness testimony. There's one house, the house that's close to the barn. The couple that lived there was questioned, and there was one night they heard a man's voice hollering, and they're not sure if it was the night of the accident, but it could have been. But when they were further questioned, they reneged on that statement.
Okay, what was the time, or we don't know when it happened, but when did the policeman investigate?
Well, it happened. She left work at 11:20, so it happened anywhere between 11:30 and 12:30. That's when they saw the car.
The police, when was there at 12:30?
Or the neighbors in the area.
It was
they saw the car there, but nobody saw what happened, supposedly. Well, the neighbors aren't close, though, so it's not like Morris.
Yeah, but when it would make a big noise, so you can't back into a house without...
If the distance is kind of far.
Yeah, I guess if it's far.
And they're watching TV.
Yeah. And we don't have a list of who was questioned?
Supposedly everybody was questioned. Everybody was the boyfriend was questioned. Everybody was questioned. The ex-boyfriend was questioned.
But we need to do a FOIA request. We need to see if we can get the testimonies or the statements. Because that would be interesting. Because I really would like to know what the boyfriend says.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if the people, you know, were like, oh, well, we were asleep and we didn't see anything or hear anything and it was dark. But the boyfriend, you know, did she come to your house? Did you see her? When was the last time you saw her?
Well, they also found change on the ground and Brianna's broken beaded necklace was also found there. So there was definitely a struggle.
Yeah. But all right. Let's paint a slightly different picture. Like, if she was shooting up by herself, got sick and threw up, was disoriented and backed the car into the house, and then stumbled from the car. You know, if she fell down and got up, she could have broke her own necklace. It could have looked like a struggle. She could have done everything. And then whoever drove by and picked up Maura could have driven by and picked up her. Or she could have run into the woods. Or she could, I mean, like, she could have done everything herself up until we don't know where she is. You know what I mean? And does it say there was, like, a massive search? Did they do, like, a
I know walk? They, I know, yeah, I'm sure they did. I just don't know the exact details. Because I remember reading there was a number of searches done.
Yeah.
There was a number of searches done.
So she couldn't have just stumbled into the woods.
Right, no, they searched, yeah.
Because
searched.
It just seems so weird that the cop would leave the car there. Like, if the cop left the car there with the lights on, then, you know, what else did he leave? Who got the car and when did they get the car? Is there any information? Is there any police report?
I'm sure there is.
We need to see if we can get to it.
Actually,
For the next podcast, we should
I
see
know
if
the
we PI, can get...
I think one of the PIs was involved in actually getting the DNA evidence and all that stuff.
Because if we can get a police report, and, like, just reading the police report would give us a little more information, because right now everything is so vague.
Yeah, so there were search teams, scent tracking dogs, and helicopters. More than 500 police officers and volunteers combed the woods near where the car was found.
Okay, so yes.
Inside the house where her car was found, there was drug paraphernalia and a gun found, actually.
Oh, shit.
That might have had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Some people think that there was a drug den going on there, and if she had had a car accident, literally crashed, but it was backed in, so it couldn't have really been that. But
think about it. If you're selling drugs, or if you're just doing dubious shit, hiding in a, like, if it's a drug den, and someone drives a car into your drug den, your drug house, you might go down and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's rough.
It could be as simple as that too. Because I mean, if she was just fell afoul of her own proclivities and then was tad disoriented and smashed the car into a drug den, you know, whoever's in there might pull her out of the car and rough her up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, without any, like, oh, we're going to kidnap you, oh, we're going to kill you, you know. Because, like, can you imagine if you just took a car and went to some drug den and drove your car into the drug den? Like, you might disappear too.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be back. You wouldn't be backing into it.
No. But I'm saying, like, all right. If we went, you know, a couple towns over to one of the nasty areas and spun our car around and backed into a drug den, you know, they might rush out and pull us from the car, and dispose of us because we just messed up their drug practices and, you know, dealing and selling.
Yeah.
You know, it might be as simple as that. Because I mean, if she was. I mean, we don't know, but if she got disoriented all on her own and had a car accident, you know.
All right, well, hope you guys enjoyed another episode of the Mind Shock Podcast. We'll be back next time. Bruce McGuire signing off.
Brooke Davis.
And Maxwell Powers.